Hello, and welcome to Unlocking Games, a show about social impact games and how they provide a new way to explain the things you care about. I'm Chad Haefeli. I work in user experience and web work in academia.
And I'm Brandon Carper, a training designer.
A couple weeks ago, we, in our last episode, talked about voter suppression trail, a very election-themed, timely sort of thing. And this time, we're going to continue the election trend a little bit, but talking about a different game on a different angle on the election called the Migrant Trail. Brandon, you were the one who discovered this, right?
Yeah, so this game, similar to the voter suppression trail, dealt with a large visible issue in the election, which was illegal immigration from Mexico into the United States.
And we see trail as the suffix on the title again.
Yeah, we do. Although I think this time it's cosmetic. I don't think it has a lot to do with the Oregon Trail as much.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So the Migrant Trail was designed by the Gigantic Mechanic Game Studio.
That's a great name for a studio.
I agree. And according to the Games for Change website, this game was created as part of the Transmedia campaign for the Undocumented documentary. by Marco Williams. You can find this documentary on IMDb. It was released in 2013 and investigates the deaths of undocumented migrants in the Arizona desert and the efforts to return their remains to families in Mexico, quote unquote.
Had you encountered this documentary before?
No, this was the first time I ran across it.
Which
was surprising, considering that Hannah loves to find obscure documentaries on Netflix.
Aha, you win this round. Is this one on Netflix?
That's a good question. We should find that out for our listeners.
Check the show notes.
So the website gives a nice description of what the game is about and trying to do. So I'll just read some quotes from the website. So the website tells us that the Migrant Trail presents a first-person journey through Arizona's desert borderlands. Play as an undocumented immigrant attempting to cross the Arizona desert and or a border patrol agent attempting to secure the border. Playing the game offers an alternative platform to further engage conversation, investigation, and inquiry into the themes and questions raised by the documentary. So the game is, really attempting to support, I think, the themes that the documentary raised and was probably part of more the promotional campaign for the documentary than meant to be a standalone experience.
I would think it still serves as one, though. It's not like it can't be comprehended if you haven't seen the documentary.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think you can already see how this game is doing something interesting and something at least different from the voter suppression trail that we talked about a couple weeks ago, and that you get to be either an undocumented immigrant or a border patrol agent.
So if voter suppression trail had done this, you would have gotten to play as the observer hurling profanity at the voters in line.
Yes, which, had you been playing them, that game might not have made it to the op-ed page of the New York
Quite possibly not.
let's see. The website also tells us, by way of background, that every year an unknown number of migrants cross through the harsh Sonoran Desert from Mexico into Arizona. They pay $1,500 to $2,500 to join a crossing party that is led by four hire guides referred to as coyotes. If one cannot keep up, twists their ankle, or runs out of water, he or she is left behind, and many die. On average, the remains of 200 dead migrants are found each year. It is not known how many are never found.
And I know it's hard to divorce this from reality and thinking about it, but like as a concept for a game, if this was somehow not a thing that was real, that would be an amazing concept for a game in of itself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. A new twist on the survival mechanic, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Put it in a sci-fi setting and an instant summer blockbuster.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, and, survival games and games that take place in, the wild lands are very popular. Mm-hmm. And this game isn't too far afield from those.
Yeah.
And from the other side, the website tells us that every day, U.S. Border Patrol agents patrol the Sonoran Desert along the Arizona-Mexico border. Their job is to apprehend undocumented border crossers, provide first aid to the injured, and locate the remains of dead migrants. So, yeah, the game is definitely attempting to be two-sided, so the Border Patrol agents are not just people hunting you like animals. They, are providing first aid and looking for the remains of the dead.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. Somehow, when I first started the game, I missed that there was an option to play as the Border Patrol agents. And so the first time I played through as the migrants, and from that perspective, the Border Patrol agents are kind of the faceless villains. And then I was kind of pleasantly surprised to see the other option available afterward.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when you start, it shows you that wall, right? And then there's the one option on the one side where you can be Border Patrol, and the option on the other side is to be the migrants. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the Border Patrol experience in a little bit, but let's talk about the immigrant experience.
Yeah, so there you pick from a number of immigrants. I'm trying to remember exactly how many there were. Was it a dozen? Is that too many?
Yeah, like 8 or 9, I think.
Yeah. And they each seem to be, if not a real person, based pretty closely on a real person. They all have stories that are very plausible and very realistic. So Adriana is trying to get to her boyfriend in New York City, who saved up $2,500 washing dishes in a restaurant so that she could make the trip. Or Francisco is trying to make money so that he can pay medical bills for his son. Like, they feel like real people.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And as they give you their background story, they intersperse that with illustrations and photos and some even short video clips.
Yeah, whereas, the Oregon Trail approach is, you're the banker, you're the carpenter. Whereas here it's, you are a person and here's a story.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's a little bit more going on from the story perspective. So the game starts, you go to the store, just like in Oregon, well, kind of like an Oregon Trail, not just like an Oregon Trail. There you buy some clothes and supplies. I think the game always starts by telling you that the majority of the money you have is going to the coyote who's going to lead you across the border. And that leaves you with about $100 usually to buy your clothes and fill up your backpack. And you have to choose between heavier, cheaper things like water and lighter, more expensive things like energy drinks. And you have 4 stats that you have to maintain through the trip. Hydration, energy, physical, which is basically your health, enus, and will.
Is that your desire to continue, I guess?
Yeah, when you see the remains of the dead, you lose your will power.
Yeah.
For example. So you fill up your backpack, you make sure you don't weigh too much. And as the journey starts, you see yourself. It's a top-down perspective. I guess it reminded me most of maybe the older Ultima games where you just see literally the top of a person's head and shoulders.
Yeah, so kind of their feet poke out every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. And you're walking in a group of people, and I think that all the people you can select to play at the beginning of the game are in this group, I came to realize.
Yeah.
So you might choose to leave behind Francisco in your first game, but later on in your fifth game, you'll actually play as Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Awkward.
Awkward. So occasionally you'll come to a fork in the road and you have to choose which way to go, and the people are just always moving forward at a set speed. And occasionally a random event will happen and you have to decide whether to give somebody supplies from your pack or try to crawl through cacti to take an easier way, but then you lose your physical stat. For example, someone might get bitten by a scorpion and you have to decide whether to give them your antibiotic ointment or leave them behind.
Meanwhile, your 4 stats are dropping as you go and you have to choose when to replenish each of them using your consumable items.
Yeah, exactly. You have to make sure your hydration doesn't get too low. You have to drag your water bottle onto your person. Yeah. And sometimes, in fact, in all of my games except for one, the Border Patrol will just kind of show up out of nowhere.
Yeah, it always happened to me very early on and was incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, at first I thought, okay, I have to go like the long way around. Yeah. Like instead of going directly to the border, maybe if I go the long way around, I'll avoid the border patrol. But I think there was only one out of six games where I didn't get caught by the border patrol.
Mm-hmm. And my ratio was similar.
Yeah, basically once they show up, you're supposed to click a tiny button called go back on the bottom to get you to turn around.
And I did not know that until I was reading your notes for this episode.
Yeah, the UI kind of themes it visually as go back to the last game screen, not go back as in change your direction.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
You know, it was almost like a blind spot for me. I think it might as well not have been there.
Yeah, but even when I did click it, my people, like, they had to turn around kind of like a snake, right? So
first person turns, second person follows them, third person follows them.
Right, and by the time the last person in the line started to get out of the way, the border patrol was already too close, and they caught me and took me to jail. Once, though, I got within literally 0.5 miles of the end of a 30-mile journey.
I would applaud you if it wouldn't blow out the mic right here, because I did not get anywhere near that close to the finish line.
Yeah, I saw the highway in sight. And I think I was just like one water bottle short of making it. but all my meters were zero, and I collapsed with the road in sight, which was kind of heartbreaking for me.
Yeah.
And that made me, I think, try again three or four more times, but I got caught by the border patrol every single time. Mm-hmm. So, Chad, you want to tell us about the border patrol?
Sure. Side of the game? When you play as a border control, I think you're presented with three different agents, border patrol agents to pick from at the beginning. Although, if I remember right, they're locked, which seemed odd to me. It's like you have to play as one of them first, and the second time through you can play as the second one, and the third time as the third one. But I wasn't quite sure what the... I didn't see any benefit or story narrative that came about as a benefit of using that method. But the goal is to apprehend and help as many migrants within your 5-hour shift as possible. So you pick one of those agents, and you can see their background, a little bit of a story of how they got to where they are. The one taught migrants English in Oklahoma City and, quote, feels weird trying to capture those same folks. So, you know, these are not, you know, Darth Vaders who are sent out to, you know, oppress minorities. They're fairly well-rounded, more so than I might expect in something that has a obvious slant to it tied to a documentary like this. But then the next agent you play he's very law and order. I think that phrase might even be used. And so he sympathizes with the immigrants as people, but, you know, it's my job is my job, and these are the rules, and I have to go enforce them. So when you're playing as the immigrants, you are people walking around. When you're playing as the border control agents, you play as their patrol vehicle. I think it's a generic kind of looking SUV of some sort. But you're driving the same roads that you navigate when you're playing the immigrants. You can choose whether to speed up or slow down, and you kind of see a circle around your vehicle, which is, I think, how far your radar, essentially, like how far you can detect what the game calls clues or the immigrants themselves. And the clues, like, they often look like footprints, and they seem kind of pointless a lot of the time.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what they were doing for me. I think once I clicked on one and it gave me a chance to apprehend an immigrant because it put me on their trail, maybe.
Yeah, but even then you didn't have to actually like move your vehicle to chase them down. It was like you clicked on something and you were presented with a choice. But other times it was like you found an empty water bottle and that's it. Like you don't have an option of like, let's go that way or do something like that. But, you know, again, depending on your speed, you're more or less likely to find clues and immigrants and other associated things. And some of the decisions, like you might see remains and have to decide whether you lose time on your shift returning them to the medical examiner, but you get points for doing that. So, yeah, the trade-off is a little oddly structured there.
Yeah, the game scoring mechanism kind of scores you, on a... how many immigrants you catch and how many remains you find. And, the game said, well, it's going to take you, a half hour to return this immigrant to Border Patrol. But since that was the whole point, like that was what you were being scored right on, I wasn't sure how that was supposed to be a trade-off.
Yeah, so was that supposed to be, like, you making a moral judgment and letting the person go, or...
Yeah, I think that might have been the general direction they were trying to go.
Or I think one choice I was given was I found an injured migrant or immigrant, and I was offered the choice of give them first aid and take them back, or just give them first aid and leave them there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I wasn't quite sure what to do or how that would impact the game mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so the stats at the end of your shift show you how many migrants died, which I think is also a measurement of how many migrants you didn't find. I think we're kind of assuming that everyone you didn't find died, but I was a little unclear on that. But I also wasn't sure how to improve that stat, or how to, you know, is it even theoretically possible to get zero migrants died? Because to me, this mode, playing as the border control agent, felt like aimless wandering, essentially. Like, you might stumble on someone, you might not. You don't have the same driving goal that you do as on the immigrant side of things.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all from the how many migrants died. It just seemed like, here's a number to impress upon you how rough the situation is. I didn't understand that it was connected to what I'd actually done in the game, although what you're saying makes sense.
Well, your perspective makes sense to me also. I didn't find like a definitive mention that was what that stat was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see that also as a, you know, no matter what you do, this many, you know, triple digits of people died anyway. So, but you know, you are a drop in the ocean, but you're doing what you can from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you also then see a map of the area you drove around with crosses, I guess, supposed to be grave markers. And you can click on them to see what, you know, shoes and other sort of bits and pieces of humanity that those immigrants left behind, jackets. But I think I mentioned earlier, there wasn't really a clear win condition to this, which is maybe that's just reality in a lot of ways. But I think I see you agree that it wasn't as compelling to play this over and over again. I played it. I think I played as each border control agent once, and that was about it.
Oh, yeah. See, I just played the first one, and I was kind of bored with the experience a bit. I mean, it was interesting, you know, from an intellectual standpoint, but I didn't feel as emotionally engaged as I did when I was playing the migrants.
Same here.
And I feel like this is something that will come up a lot as we examine these games where we say, well, it wasn't really engaging as a game, but maybe that was supposed to mirror real life. And I think my position on that is the same as, you know, when I would be discussing a short story or a novel with someone and they would say, well, you know, this part is really boring, but you know, real life is really boring as well, and it's just accurate. You know, and the answer to that is, well, then you don't write the novel about that.
Yeah.
You know, you write the novel about the interesting thing. So, you know, I think my standpoint is that if you put something in a game, you should make it enjoyable as a game. And I don't know that, you know, making something unsatisfying and saying, well, life is unsatisfying is necessarily a good defense.
I think you could probably sprinkle that perspective in there. But as long as I think the core has to be what you're talking about, the core has to be satisfying as a game. And then you can put some layers on top of it that maybe get at the message of the game.
Oh yeah, I think I would agree. Yeah, as long as the core gameplay is satisfying, I think it's okay to maybe season your gameplay mm-hmm. with some aspects of futility.
Yeah, but in this case, I think from the Border Patrol side, I did not find it particularly compelling at the core.
Right. So as I was playing this, you know, I was thinking what the apparent goal of the game was, and the website for the game kind of lays it right out there, and you know, that's kind of to create empathy for undocumented immigrants as well as the Border Patrol. The exact language says that it wants to engage conversation, investigation, and inquiry. But it feels like, yeah, empathy is what they're really going for.
Mm-hmm. That was what I took away from it, at least.
Yeah. And I feel to a significant degree that the game was successful in that. I felt that, you know, it wasn't an extremely, you know, high-res, art-intensive game, but it was fairly immersive. So as you're walking down the trail, you hear some howling wind constantly. You see photos and videos of actual people in a way that, you know, didn't make it look incongruous, you know, as you're looking at the game graphics versus the actual photos and videos. It kind of worked well together, I thought.
That made me think of, you know, going back to the original Oregon Trail. Even as a kid, I remember wondering, like, who were the real people who went on this trail? And I feel like that's something that, you know, technology at the time, there's limitations, et cetera. But it would have been interesting in Oregon Trail to have some of this kind of aspect of seeing who the real people were and making it feel like, yes, you are a person going on the trail, a character going on the trail in the game, but there's also real people who did this thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, Oregon Trail is kind of just bare game mechanics with some, maybe like a photo of a place here and there. But yeah, if they'd introduced
photo loosely defined.
Right. Well, yeah. Sure. When we say photo, you know, we don't mean photo.
8 pixels.
Yeah, 8 pixels. But yeah, yeah, that's a good point. So if Oregon Trail had begun with just a short, you know, vignette of who you were. Although, you know, me as a 6-year-old child, I don't know how much I would have read that.
Yeah, that's
maybe a couple sentences couldn't have gone amiss.
Yeah.
I also felt that choosing which supplies to take at the beginning turned out to be engaging enough as a puzzle. The first time I played through, I didn't really know what I was doing. But then once I got a better sense of, okay, I'm probably going to need about this much water and about this much energy to make it through, it was more entertaining.
Yeah, I thought my first time it was a little overwhelming, but I think it actually was designed pretty well. And by my second or third playthrough, I'd kind of trial and error my way into figuring out what worked. I thought that was fairly well designed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so we were just talking about the storytelling in the game, about the little biographies. I think those were pretty successful as well. So a couple weeks ago we talked about Characters and Viewpoint by Orson Scott Card, and he talks about how one way to get an audience to care about your character is to show them being vulnerable for no fault of their own. And in this game, you know, you see the one lady who just wants to get to her boyfriend who is hundreds of miles away in New York City. You see the dad just trying to get health care for his children. You know, they did nothing wrong, but they're in this hard spot, so you feel bad for them.
Yeah, looking at the 4 frames I mentioned in the previous episode also of how people view the world, you know, this is clearly like gold star for tackling the human resources frame. Like if someone sees, if their predominant view of the world is how they can help people and looking at, you know, empathy and things like that, like this is perfect targeting that audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing that is a good storytelling technique that Card talks about is showing people who are willing to risk a lot and put a lot of effort into achieving a goal. And, you know, these people are putting up thousands of dollars and risking their lives to get across the border to be with the people they want to be with or to, you know, make the money they need to help their kids. So I feel you feel a lot of sympathy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And getting more toward the actual game mechanics, so the I think the procedural rhetoric, so the argument that the game mechanics make is pretty decent on the immigrant side. So a lot of times the game will force you to decide whether to leave people behind so that you can keep up the pace. So in my third or fourth game, some person got a thorn in their toe, like 30 seconds out of the gate. And the game said, "Do you want to leave this person behind? They have a thorn in their toe." And I said, "No, I'm not an inhuman monster." And then my people started to walk really, really slow. And I thought, maybe I am an inhuman monster. Can I restart my game so I can leave that guy behind?
Well, I feel like we've gone an unusually long time without referencing Papers, Please at this point. but, you know, I think if you go back to our episodes on that, we talked also about how, you know, the first time someone wants you to bend a rule for them, it's different than the 8th time someone wants you to bend a rule for them. Like the first time someone gives you the sob story at the border crossing in Papers, Please, I was more willing to let them through than I was after the 8th person had asked me to do that.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the first time you get an emotional response, and after that, it's just kind of a game decision that you end up making.
Yeah, or everything else is built up. You're like you are a half mile from the highway at that point, and
Right, right. And you say, you can crawl.
Yep.
I'm going to win the game. Yeah. So the game forces you to make some difficult decisions and maybe, you know, kind of put you in the shoes of the people who have to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't run into this, but in your playthroughs, did it ever turn things around? Like, are you ever the person who has a problem and someone else gives you a supply?
Oh, that's a good point. There's only the one game I played that I actually got far enough without being caught by the Border Patrol for that to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think anyone ever offered to help me.
Or it would have been really interesting if you are a person who could get left behind.
Right. That's a really good point. Well, the perspective's kind of weird because, I mean, it's not really clear who, like, it shows you the micro that you're playing, but then you're acting as if you're the leader of the group every single time, even though all the different migrants are in the group every single time.
Yeah, that's so true. They are that snake behind you no matter what.
Yeah, it's a little bit vague, like, what role you're actually playing in the game itself. Maybe if that had been a little bit tighter and more defined, that would have opened up some more interesting game mechanics like you're describing.
Yeah. Well, in the sequel.
Yeah, sequel.
We can come back to that. And I mentioned the success of the human resources frame earlier. I think it also does pretty well at the symbolic frame of appealing to that kind of like higher humanity and rituals and values and all that of how, you know, you are part of a group who are also individuals, but you have a common goal that everyone is reaching toward.
I mean, you would say that goal is to support your family or...
Yeah, you know, the big picture goal. It's all, you know, for the love of your family or your friends, or, you know, whether the implementation differs as far as whether you're trying to get to your child on the other side or, you know, something else entirely different. But all, at its core, it's, you know, for a better life, to get to family, et cetera. Like, there's these shared values that I think people who see the world that way will identify with. I think it's very easy to put yourself in the shoes of, oh, well, this is me and my child is on the other side.
Yeah, I agree. I think the stories are written in such a way that they're specific enough to kind of evoke a reaction, but also just vague enough for you to be able to see yourself in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I was also trying to think about how it tackles the structural frame of people who, you know, look at the world as, I think that's the one where they look at the world as a machine and how you appreciate the structures in it and see how things apply to it. And the closest I could really come is, but it does well, I think, is that buying resources that we mentioned earlier. Like, there's a structure to the game as you get through it. There are rules and clear yeses and nos along the way in what is otherwise kind of a squishy topic. But that's admittedly more about the quality of the game and the mechanics itself rather than the effectiveness of the message. But I think, as we said earlier, getting people to play and keep playing as you go is still a relevant factor in these games.
Yeah, maybe there's something to be said that every time you go to the store, you don't feel like you quite have enough money. Like, the machine doesn't quite have enough gas to get you where you want to go.
Yeah, I didn't find the God mode.
Yeah. You didn't open up the console.
No.
Turn on noclip.
I will take 3 million bottles of water, please.
So, some things that I think could have been done better, you and I think both... notice that the UI of the game.
Yeah. It's a Flash game, and it was clearly, I mean, this was a tie-in for something else. It was not, you know, a game that, it does stand alone as a game, but it was not produced as a game that would stand alone. So I think maybe some of the details were a little rougher on the corners, but in the store, while the mechanics of buying things and the thought process that went into that was good, the actual mechanics of how you buy things in the store I thought were not great.
Yeah, the click and drag was a little bit unintuitive. When I first started, I was never quite sure if I'd actually bought that one shirt, because when you click and drag it over, it was supposed to change the color of the black and white outline to the color of the shirt, but the color of the shirt was almost the same color as the background. And
yeah, the first time I played, I essentially wandered into the desert naked because I thought I had bought things that I hadn't. Not a recommended approach if you're trying a border crossing.
Words to live by.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and for a game that seems to promote trying the same thing repeatedly, whether it's as a different character or just trying to make it again, I would have appreciated some shortcuts or more thought into streamlining the process of buying things in the store. Like, eventually there was kind of this baseline of things that I bought every time, and having to go through that over and over again was annoying.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, every time I go to the store, it's like, okay, click and drag 5 cans of tuna, 5 yep. bottles of Suero, mm-hmm. whatever it's called.
Yeah, I meant to look that up, exactly what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then, I think we talked about this a little bit, but then the walking was a bit obscure. Like, there is a capability to turn around that you mm-hmm. you didn't notice, and I didn't notice until halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of map? I did not find one.
Yeah, the map I realized is when you play the Border Patrol agent and you see at the end of your session
right.
all of the where the dead migrants are, I think that's the map you're actually walking along as a migrant.
But you can't see that at the time you're playing as an immigrant.
No. So you're kind of guessing. Yeah, you can't really make a decision about which way to go with any informed knowledge.
But again, maybe that's getting at the situation. You've paid a coyote to take you. They're the ones who would know the route, not you.
Yeah, but, you know, I guess within the game universe, you know, if someone's leading you, why am I picking which way to go? You know what I mean?
That's a fair point, too. Yeah.
So, I felt like the flow of the game was very uneven, unfortunately. So, the Border Patrol, especially, you know, I'd just be playing the game and suddenly the squad car would come out of nowhere and then the game would be over.
Yeah. So I'd have this brief moment of panic and, like, trying to do things, but there was really nothing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and like we said, maybe that's the point. You know, maybe that's like real life, that mm-hmm. you're just walking along the desert trail and you suddenly see the police and that's game over, man.
Did you ever manage to evade them once they showed up?
No, never. Never. Even after I found the turnaround button, the go back button, it didn't make a difference. So, you know, I would spend, like, you know, 2 minutes, like, tweaking my supply strategy, making sure my weight ratio was right, and, you know, feeling pretty good about it, and then, you know, a minute in the game, I got captured by the police, and it just wasn't that fun.
Yeah, and then you're back in the store and have to go through all that stuff we talked about again.
Right, exactly. So that was frustrating from the migrant perspective, because the, you know, the difficulty just spiked way up into the undealable zone.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about game flow, that it wasn't fun. And then the, like we said, in the patrol scenario, I wasn't sure, like, what my target was. I didn't have a clear sense of that. So, you know, and in that case, there was no easy or difficult. There was just no, for me, goalpost to even mm-hmm. head toward.
Yeah, I don't think you can even see the map while you're playing as the Border Patrol agent. You see it at the end of your shift, but not during.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't get the sense that I was actually patrolling anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and also more on the patrol side. So I felt like the procedural rhetoric, you know, the argument the game mechanics were making was strong on the migrant side. But on the patrol side, I felt it was kind of weak. You know, you choose between going fast and not seeing clues versus going slow and seeing a lot of clues. But the whole point of that game was to click on clues and find mm-hmm. things. So I didn't understand what the advantage would have been to going fast in the first place.
Yeah. And plus, you know, if you go fast, you've got a narrower range of sight, but you're going faster. So you're going to cover more territory and probably find the same number of clues anyway.
Right. And there's no sense of trade-off in this scenario, unlike the migrant scenario. Maybe mm-hmm. they could have given you, you know, a quota of migrants to apprehend, and you had to choose between taking extra time to help a migrant versus, you know, not helping them so you could meet your quota. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you meet a migrant who encourages you to bend the rules and let them go, kind of like we were talking about before.
Yeah. I mean, in really the decisions you're presented with, like I mentioned earlier, I had the choice to give them first aid and leave them there, or give them first aid and take them with me. Well, you know, I'm not going to leave them to die in the desert. Like, that seems to go against everything, especially when what characterization you're given of the Border Patrol agents are seem to lead you in the direction that they would not leave people to die in the desert either.
Right, right. And then at the end, there was no real call to action. So on the voter suppression trail, they at least linked you to, here's how you can find your polling place. And in this game, you know, there's no link to really anything. There's no link to like a petition or relevant laws or a political action group to donate to, or, you know, some solution to this problem. No way to learn more, at least not that I noticed. I didn't totally finish the game, but I don't know that
if that's the case, if there was that kind of thing past the finishing of the game, it should be more possible to get to that point.
Right. Yeah, a lot of the times when I'm teaching people about training design, I tell them that it's no help to anyone if someone just sits around being aware.
Like, yes, I know of this.
Yeah, when people say, well, I'm going to train them so they know about this. And I say, well, that ain't going to help anybody. what do you want them to do? And I just would have appreciated, I think, in this game, just some nudge in some direction to go, you know.
Well, is the nudge in this case, go see the documentary?
That's true, although I don't know that the documentary is brought up in the game that I remember.
It's not directly, I don't think.
But then I guess...
You're within the website of the documentary the whole time you're playing the game.
That's true. Yeah. It's debatable.
It's possible the documentary itself fills some of these roles more, but I also do feel like the game itself could have also done the same. There's no reason why not.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and again, kind of like Voter Suppression Trail, it's... that one did at least link to polling places. This one does, I think, miss opportunities to appeal to a lot of different worldviews and what people would react to.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So I think, overall, there were some, you know, maybe soft spots in the game that could have been improved, like the Border Patrol aspect. Although I think the game is, you know, commendable for presenting both sides of the issue.
Yeah, and without being really heavy-handed about either one of them.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's something that, you know, I haven't read any studies specifically on, you know, the fact that if you hit someone over the head with something, they're less likely to maybe have their minds changed than if you present something in an even-handed way. But I feel like this presents it very even-handedly without hitting you over the head with either viewpoint, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the end, I mean, we had some issues with the Border Patrol side, but I would say I sympathized to differing various levels with people on both sides of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, the migrant trail part, even though it was, you know, just kind of a brief game with some, you know, basic mechanics, I felt that it created an experience that I'll remember, you know, that feeling of almost getting to the road and then collapsing of starvation and hydration rather.
Yeah, there's a strong narrative there.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I think this was a fruitful game to look at. If you're interested in trying it out, you can Google The Undocumented or The Migrant Trail and find a link. So, you've been listening to the second episode of Unlocking Games. I'm Brandon Carper.
I'm Chad Hafley.
And please give us a shout. Let us know what you thought of the episode, or let us know if you have any social impact games you'd like us to take a look at and discuss. You can find us online at unlockinggames.com or on Twitter at unlockinggames. And until next time, it's your move.